right, Joel Rollins with Rave Radio back on day three, early in the morning, watching people get coffee. And with me again is Gary Kay. Gary, thanks.
Thanks for having me, Joel. I guess it's day three, but we're going to do a day two review, right?
That's right. Okay. So what did you see yesterday?
I saw a couple of cool things. First of all, there's a company called Circle Technology that was started by Steve Hicks, the founder of InFocus, and they're making some waves here with some interesting collaborative products. Now, everybody's talking about collaboration and BYOD, this and that. Theirs is along the same lines, but very specific applications. For example, Elmo, that company, ELMO, the overhead projector company, is exclusively partnered with them to provide the education version of Circle Technology. Basically, how it works is you put an access point in a room, and the access point can have a bridge to the network or can stand alone on its own. And then any device that students bring into the room, that would include laptops, tablets, or phones, jump on this Wi-Fi network. And then the teacher can then send all his or her content that's on their screen directly to the students' screens that are right in front of them. So the students don't actually have to look at the projector at the front of the room. The students are looking at their personal information displays right in front of their faces. So this is a great product from an ADA standpoint, right? Because there's because you have the issues of people who have sight problems, and it's a great product from the standpoint of controlling what they're looking at on their device, right? Instead of them in ninth grade browsing Facebook and Twitter, you're forcing them to see the content. You're sending the PowerPoint presentation to their desktop.
Absolutely. Along with that, I was really pleased to see Williams Sound's new, I forget what they even call it, the Wi-Fi system that has 56 channels that you can send directly to iPad or iPhone. I work a lot with private schools. They are issuing iPads to all students now. So that, you know, that it's in itself, two things. You're right. Number one, being able to control what the student is looking at in the classroom. But beyond that, are we going to even need large screen displays if everyone in the audience has a display?
Well, I've been a big proponent of the last 5 years of saying that at some point in time in the future, 10 years, maybe it's 15 years, maybe it's beyond our being in this industry, the need for a large screen display in the front of a room will go away. Now, it doesn't mean there won't be large screen displays in other places. For example, if you're a teacher and you're teaching stuff and you're on a current slide and you want everybody's attention for that current slide, and let's say you are sending that content to that display that's sitting in front of them, some people don't learn as quickly as other people. Some people need to refer back to the past slides. And so projecting on the sides of the room with lower resolution, not as bright projectors, the previous three slides or previous six slides, I think, is actually more helpful than having just one slide at the front of the room. So I think there's this whole conceptual thing about how to design a room the best way for workflows, like re-looking at the educational workflow. And then you look at corporate boardrooms and trainings. Everybody's bringing in their own tablet. Presenting directly to that tablet is much better because I can make notes on it. I can save what I want to save.
I can
throw away what I don't want to save. I can email it to myself, email it to other people. I can bring other people in. The user interface, however, is the key, right? I mean, what Crestron and Extron and AMX are doing right now is not what they need to be doing for this world of collaboration. Everything they're doing is based on we're going to have control of a whole bunch of equipment, gear,
right,
hardware in a room, and make it easier for you to interface with it. They're doing a great job there for the most part. What they're not doing, and no one's really addressing yet, is I need a user interface. I don't even want to call it control system. A user interface that allows me to get content from wherever I want to get it and then put it wherever I want to put it without having to be trained for 3 days on how to do that.
Well, let me ask an even broader question then. Not only do we not need, okay, maybe we won't need the large display at the front of the room. Here's a second question. Will we need the room?
That's a good question. I think that this concept of huddle spaces, you know, I think that won't be driven by AV. That will be driven by, you know, big corporations saying, you know what, it's a lot cheaper if we build a giant cubicle land or a big open space than for us to put walls everywhere. And if we can create walls with sound masking,
right,
we can create walls with visual imaging, and we can create walls with portable panels that we can roll around, I agree with you. I mean, again, this is all going to happen after you and I are out of this industry. But what's interesting is we see a vision for it. I mean, you go over there to Cisco, and they've got a system that is their new telepresence system that comes in, you know, 50, 70, 80-inch sizes. and they roll around. I mean, they have
a two camera system,
single camera system, two display, single display system, and you can put them anywhere you want to put them, and all you do is connect them to the network, and you can wirelessly send content both directions to them or from them to your tablet. So you can join a conference from anywhere, you can collaborate on documents from anywhere. But they built it all to be portable. And it used to be, I mean, think of how conceptually difficult that would have been 10 years ago, because we had all the connectivity issues that we don't have to deal with now. It's just either the network's working or the network's not working. That becomes the most critical factor.
You know, interestingly enough, too, and if you look at knowledge workers, if you look at, you know, you're talking about the space with the cubicles and not divided up.
Right.
But in a knowledge worker system, do you even need to have the space? I mean, interestingly, I mean, you know my wife, Sharon. She's been a telecommuter for 17 years.
Right.
She started back when you and I lived in Anaheim. I mean, Sharon's got the best commute in the world. It's like five steps in the morning. I commute 31 miles, and it can take me 3 hours to get to work.
I think there's a different generation of people coming along that will totally just gravitate towards that, because they can work anywhere. They don't have to be in class to attend class. They don't have to be in person to have the same experience that we get out of the in-person meeting. My kids have collaborated on school projects with headsets on, and they're talking to their friends. You know, when we were in school, for us to collaborate on a project, we had to decide whose house we were going to go to and get permission to get there, and then get rides to get there. It's not that way. So they're growing up with it being okay they have headsets on. They're growing up being okay that they're in these sort of virtual environments in a way that they're imagining in their head, or they're actually joining on, you know, whether they're using WebEx or Skype or even FaceTime or something like that. I think as they mature and they become in the workforce, it'll be just normal. I think what Sharon's doing is pioneering.
Yeah. Well, I mean, pioneering for 17 years. This started a long time ago.
Right. And there are companies, you know, IBM have more than half their employees work outside of corporate offices. Cisco, more than half their employees. There are companies that are doing that. But at the same time, the average company, that we were talking about offline before this podcast, that, and I forget the percentage that you said, it was like 50% of, or whatever the number was, are small businesses. People work for small businesses.
It's closer to 70.
So 70% of people work for small businesses. Those small business owners, they want to see their employees every day. They're not forward thinking for the most part. Now, you and I are different, obviously. I don't mind. And in fact, we have one employee who has come in the office maybe once all year, and she does great. I mean, we have no problem with that. We have employees that will often not come into the office and work from wherever, and we have remote employees who are never in the office. So it's normal for us, and I feel comfortable with that, but the majority of small business people, they want to see their people. They want to know that they're actually working, and it's partially a trust factor, but it's partially that's not the environment they grew up in.
Right, right, absolutely, and it really is. It's a matter of what you're used to. Obviously, in my company, I mean, we do a lot. I do a lot of work from home. I do all, you know, proposal writing and all that kind of stuff in my home office, which is actually better than my office at work.
Yeah.
And I have video conferencing and all that kind of stuff. But we also deal with physical product, and we deal with technology, so we have to get together.
Yeah, and especially when you're staging a project and you're designing a project. Hey, did you have a chance to go to the Panasonic booth yesterday?
No, I haven't yet. Okay, I've been sitting at this desk most of the time.
They have a cave sort of thing where they're using short throw projectors, three of them, and they've basically you go walk inside this sort of cave area and you're riding a roller coaster in 3D, and it is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I mean, you know, 3D, I'm not a big fan of immersion technology. I love the caves, not a big fan of, but this is a really good. Brought all three of them together in a perfect environment. And Amelia, who works for Rave, she and I went there yesterday, and I wrote it, quote unquote. You put on a 3D headset, and you just stand there, and you're riding a roller coaster. So you're actually not moving; it's all visual perception.
Sure.
She does the same thing, and within 30 seconds—well, not even 30 seconds—within 10 seconds of the roller coaster starting, the guy who's in charge of Panasonic's grabbing the back of her shirt because she's about to fall forward, and he had to hold on to her the rest of the time because her visual perception immersion, she was completely immersed in the ride. And if you stand there and watch, more than half the people that go up there to ride it are having to be held on to. It is a great demo. And the reason I pointed out is there's a theme among all the projector manufacturers here, all of them. They all use the same term. Christie, Barco, Panasonic, Epson, they all said the same thing to me when I went to their booth yesterday. We're not showing technology, we're showing applications. We're showing how our products are being used in applications. And in some of the booths, it's hard to even find the specifications on the product.
Yeah, and that's it. Product definitely, in a lot of places, like you said yesterday about the codec, product is disappearing in favor of application.
Yep.
And in as products become more ubiquitous, the goal is make them disappear.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's sort of the theme that they're doing. And I think what's happening is that you're going to see a lot more products and more technology being sold based on case studies. So that's a lesson for those of you who are listening today. If you're an integrator and you're listening to this, that's the same thing that's going to happen to you. I taught a marketing 101 class here at Infocom on the first day, just to teach integrators how to do marketing better. And the number one piece of advice I gave them is they need to produce a ton of case studies. That does not mean you need to bring in a professional photographer. It doesn't need you bring in a professional writer. Just take a bunch of pictures with your iPhone and get someone to write something with a list of equipment, you know, and basically what the customers wanted to do and what you did, how you did it for them, and get them online. I mean, if you're doing 100 projects a year, you should be producing 100 case studies a year. And if one person raised their hand and said, what if the customer doesn't give you permission? Fine, just black out the customer's name.
Right,
still
right.
Use it.
I do that quite a lot. I mean, I think the most effective thing I can do for a customer is to show them what else we've done that would be pertinent to them. And it is, brochures don't work anymore. You've got to tailor that message to the person that you're sending it to.
Yep.
Everyone expects that now. Okay, well, listen, the other thing that I always ask you in these podcasts, what'd you see that was dumb?
You keep trying to get me to say something. I don't know. I mean, I'm still perplexed by the Microsoft booth.
Yeah,
I mean, they do have a huge booth here, and there's nothing in there. They have the perceptive pixel displays hanging there. They have a few of them hanging there. And those are neat to look at. I mean, it's a neat technology. But there's no one from Microsoft working in the booth. There's no Microsoft employee there. So basically, it's a giant open meeting space that anybody can use.
Right.
So I'm not sure exactly what happened there. I'm going to try to get the full scoop.
Oh, let me give you a tip from yesterday. If you want to see someone from Microsoft in that booth, show up with a camera. Literally, you will then be surrounded by people with Microsoft badges on.
What is it they're showing? Did you ask?
No, I didn't actually get a chance because they were just so busy. Basically speaking, they what they're saying is that they want their partners to show technology that uses Microsoft.
Okay, well, one other thing that
I think they had a product not show up.
Yeah, I think so too. I did get a treat yesterday. I got to meet John Undercuffler, and I don't know if you know who John Undercuffler is, but he's the guy who wrote all the who conceptualized all the futuristic stuff in the movie Minority Report. He had his own booth here, and he has got a new company.
Oh, wow.
And I got to spend a whole bunch of time with him, and I shot a video with him, a 10, 15-minute interview, just talking about Minority Report and the technology and how, you know, how his company is moving towards humanizing all this technology and that kind of stuff. And that interview will be up online today. So that his name of his company, by the way, is Oblong. So I'll make sure I write a blog and connect to that. But it was a neat experience because you don't often get to. I mean, he's literally like sort of a hero. This is how geeky I am. He's truly a hero because he, you know, you watch that movie and you're like, oh, okay, this is what our industry is going to do for people 50 years from now. And I asked him, I said, you know, how's your vision going for 2054, which is when the movie was visioned. He goes, you know what, we're 10, 15 years ahead. We're going to see this stuff happen.
Yeah, we are going to see it happen much,
20s, early
much
30s.
Sooner, without a doubt. One of my big technological heroes is Ray Kurzweil.
Was he here?
No, he's not here, actually, but I've corresponded with him quite a bit. And he's developing things like gesture recognition.
Right. He's at Google now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's the guy who wants to not die.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm with him quite on that one because eventually I think I might even want to.
Did you watch that documentary?
No, I haven't.
Followed
yet.
Him around?
No.
Yeah, it's good. He's a very unusual guy, but you totally fall in love with what he wants to do. I mean,
yeah.
He have a lot of empathy.
Humanizing technology.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I just don't really want to die. I want to stay young and I want to be able to come up with new ideas. I mean, he came up with speech to talk.
Right.
Technology.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
He solved from an ADA perspective for people who couldn't interface with keyboards.
Well, I mean, and going back even farther to when we were kids, I mean, he was one of the great powers behind the synthesizer, which if you look at what's happened over the last 25 years, how much that technology has played into everything. Your iPhone, the whole idea of text-to-speech, speech-to-text really started with Ray.
And one other thing I want to point out is yesterday we posted our 2014 Rave Reader's Choice Awards, and that's a big deal because we had unlike any other publication in the industry, we don't just award awards to people who are advertising with us. We actually sent out a call for entries back in January. That took about a month and a half. Then we got people, that was an open call. You could nominate any company you wanted in one of 25 categories. This is specific. So what happens is we send that out, we get nominations, and in some categories we had 40 companies nominated, in some categories we had 5, but we took the top 3 in each category, and then we sent it out to all of our readers and said, you vote on your favorite manufacturer training program, your favorite sales support team, your favorite website, and that's all posted online. You can go to ravepubs.com or ravepubs.com/infocom14, and you can see all the winners. And for anybody who challenges is that we give awards to people who advertise with us. The advertisers overall only got about 20% of the awards. About 80% of the awards were won by people who don't advertise with us. And that's different, too. Most publications give awards to people who advertise, and they'll give more awards to people who advertise more.
And it's not your fault that some of the best companies advertise with you.
Yeah, exactly. But this is just a good testament to sort of where our industry is. Now, the top 10 tour, since you mentioned it, this here is judged by the editors within Raven. The reason why we have to do this is these are all products that are not announced yet. In other words, we tell companies starting in May, April, you tell us your products you're going to launch here at the show. And if we think they're good enough, we'll put them in our top 10 tour. And these are like the 10 products that you need to see on the show floor. And there's an article that will be posted later today where you can see the actual top 10 tour products, the companies that we recommended you go to. And again, same situation. Not even half of these companies advertise with us. So you've got, MXL's got a new teleconferencing mic solution that's amazing. Chief's new storage box with a mount, projector mount built into it for ceiling applications. Vizix Meeting Minder digital room sign line is phenomenal looking. We've already written that up. Blonder Tongues, MPHDE 50, is a media streaming device. You know, they're known for audio, but now they're all of a sudden doing video as well. So these are companies that deserved recognition, and we thought would be the top 10 products that you should see at Infocom. So that'll be posted online as well.
Great. Well, definitely take a look for that. It's at ravepubs.com/infocom14. And Gary, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Joel, and I look forward to talking to you later.
Absolutely.